Welcome to another edition of Father Time, the comedic reference guide for all things dadding. I'm joined today, of course, by my producer, Mr. Andy Lerner. Andy?
If you want to know why things sound better today, it's because we're not in the same place.
We will get to that. We are not in. We're not in my noisy back office room. We are in a professional studio because our guest today is a professional at many things. He is a well-known comic and host who has appeared on everything from Conan to Marin to Comedy Bang Bang. All the cool guy tickets got punched.
I'm surprised they let us in here.
I know, it's honestly shocking to me. But he's probably best known for his wildly popular podcast, Never Not Funny. But today he'll be more known as Oliver's dad. Please welcome Mr. Jimmy Pardo.
Hello.
Welcome, Jimmy Pardo.
Thank you, Andy. Nice to see you again. Andy maintains that we've met in the past. I recognize the face, certainly, but not the conversation.
It's only my way of trying to ingratiate myself with people I don't know.
Is that so?
Yeah, I just make up a story.
Andy's never met anyone, and he's always like, hey, it's nice to see you again.
Because what are you going to say? You're going to be the a-hole that goes,
We never met.
No, we've never met.
That happened to me at a casting office. Yeah.
Why would they do that to you?
I go, it's nice to see you again. And she goes, oh, we've met before. Where did we meet? And I was like, I don't know.
Maybe we didn't.
And then I just,
why would they put you back in your heels? That's why I say the same thing you just said. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
But
that's all
not
I
again.
Ever say.
I just say nice to see you in case we've met previously.
It's nice to see you. That's it.
Nice
that's all you.
You
need to know about what's happening.
Yeah.
Anything previously never happened, but here, it's nice to see you. Okay. That's a little mic check. My guest today, Jimmy Pardo, is a father.
I am. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. We always do these podcasts, and I only did this so I could come do. Basically, your podcast.
But did mine weeks ago. You didn't have to follow up with this.
No, I felt like a lot of questions were unresolved that day.
Oh, really? You think so? All right.
I feel like I had some questions about what happened.
Well, it went horribly.
It was atrocious. I don't think it aired. I don't think anything
ever. No, we buried it.
You buried it. It's sad when they just
cut. Actually had a lot of people responded to that. You were active on social media responding to the people that were commenting on something we spoke about. I don't remember what it was.
Strunk and White, I think we talked about.
About what?
Grammar. And you had pummeled me. I brought up Strunk and White about the proper grammar of putting the... This is going down a rabbit hole. Punctuation.
Yes, that's right.
God damn it.
Here's what I love, Jamie. I love the fact that Andy has... he continues to move the microphone away from your face, and you insist on leaning into it, not taking his cue.
Thank you.
He's moving it away from you. You stay where you are. Let him move the microphone.
You have popped every pee you have spoken in the last 5 minutes.
It's hysterical. And it's like you're literally... If you put it on the ground, you'd be laying on the ground right like Perry Como.
Isn't it insane, though? But my brain doesn't want to stay away from it.
Yeah, stay away from it.
I do the same on stage. I eat the mic.
Are you one of those?
I'm terrible at it. And it blocks my face.
Which is...
Are you one of the guys, like some guys I've worked with...
I don't like that. That guy's weird, too.
They hold it at their waist.
I don't like that guy.
And you're like,
how
is that mic catching?
It infuriates me. Use the mic properly. Like Eliza Schlesinger, who's a terrific comedian...
Where does she hold it?
She holds it like at the top, like it's like she's a rapper. It's a weird.
I've seen that. Yeah.
Like she's doing a bullfight or something. It's very strange.
Maybe that's her thing, man.
I find it very off-putting.
I got to get a thing first and foremost. All right, Jimmy. Listen, let's do your career a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's funny. I'm in your podcasting studio, and it's 2006, huh?
We started in 2006, March of 2006, so a little over 10 years now.
I mean, before that, I've known you as a huge comic, and you're kind of a comics comic. You get a little embarrassed when I tell you that, but you're the kind of guy all the other comics come in because you never know what's going to happen on stage.
Thank you.
Because you're criminally insane. You actually did one of your albums was all crowd work.
Well, you know, most of them are.
You really have no jokes.
No. The first one's pretty scripted, and then, you know, the second one... You know, look, they all have a skeleton to them, but then but Pompous Clown has a lot. That's my second one, has a lot, 90% crowd work.
Are you already at the point where you've done so much crowd work. Is there anything new? Or you when you ask a guy what he does for a living, are you already, you have a million spears ready?
I guess I do. I got some arrows in my quiver. But I always try to find the interesting thing.
Do you actually write jokes, or do you just get on stage?
No, I haven't written down a joke. That's not true. On stage the other night I did. I said this. It made me laugh so hard. I said, somebody moaned a joke, and I said, we don't like that joke. I'm mad. And then I said, well, don't get mad, get glad. No, seriously, go out, buy a Glad trash bag, put it around your neck, cinch it up, and breathe in heavily.
That's huge.
Basically, kill yourself. is what I was getting at.
Oh, I got that point.
It killed. And then I was like, you know what? I will never remember this line. I will write it down. And so then I wrote that one down.
Do you ever go back and listen to your stuff?
No, I hate it. No, I hate every second of my voice.
I'm the same, man. I can't. Even when it's like a perfect set, I'm like, oh, that's my head's shaped wrong.
My head's shaped wrong in vocals?
I can't watch. I can't listen to my high-pitched, nasally Boston tone where I can't pronounce R's.
I got to tell you a couple of things that you need to know about yourself. Stop it, because you're very handsome and you have a great voice.
You're delicious.
In fact, it infuriates me that you're not more successful. Now, yet I'm also really
wait, I'm not successful?
No, you're not doing well.
Oh, no!
I said more successful. I didn't say not successful.
Well,
I said
we could all
more
be more
successful. That's my point.
Well, we'll talk about that later, because if you don't host a match game, I'm going to start killing people. Let's go back.
Go ahead.
How did I saw a crazy headshot of you with a mullet and wired rim round glasses.
Oh, with the
was that your first comedy headshot?
No. Well, yes. No. My first comedy headshot was done by a guy, what was his name? I don't want to say Lee Cramp. That was a guy who worked at the gas station, but it was a guy who did all of the Chicago. He did Judy Tenuta. He did Emo Phillips. He did Carla Felicia and Mark Roberts and Paul Gilmartin. He did everybody's.
And you thought, this is it. That's all I need is this picture, and I'll go high.
I'll be famous.
I'll be famous.
And and that picture's okay. Kind of looks a little Penny's Sears photo-y. My first headshot, though, was from a guy named Pete Stenberg. Here's a fun story about show business.
Okay.
I had an appointment to have my photos taken by Pete Stenberg, in Chicago in 1900 and, oh boy, what would it have been? 87 or 88.
Sure.
And Miami Vice was still happening.
Of course it was.
So I had, in my picture, I have a mesh. It's a hot pink. It's black and white, so you don't know this, but it popped nicely. He liked the contrast. It was a hot pink shirt with the white Miami Vice blazer over it. I got lost getting there. I was about 40 minutes late, but I walked in and I said, I'm so sorry, I'm late. He said, that's okay. I'm just finishing up with this young man. And he goes, take a look at that kid. That kid's going to be a huge star one day. It will be my honor that I took this kid's photos. And I just looked over and went, yeah, great. I don't know who that kid is. He's a kid. Fred Savage. True story.
Have you talked to Fred since then?
No.
Never once?
No, and I want to talk to Fred to go, you're never going to believe it. I was at your first headshot session.
Why don't you just have him to your podcast?
Was he like six or something?
He may have been six
at that point. Yeah, he had to have been because, no, he was, no.
By the time he was like eight when he was on that show, right?
Yeah, that was the 80s though.
This was 87 or, it was before Wonder Years.
He directed an episode of My Boys that I did.
Did he really?
He was the nicest guy ever.
He was a great guy.
He is the greatest guy, but you cannot, he looks exactly the same. Like he aged, but he looks like the little boy.
Looks like Kevin Arnold.
He looks like Kevin
Arnold. Did you watch The Grinder?
Yeah.
He was great.
Yes.
I'm infuriated that was canceled.
He is great. All right.
But that was, so that was my first headshot. Then I did the one with the emo Judy guy. And then I did another session and that's the one you're speaking of, where I forget his name. David Renard was his name. And he took my photos, and and I was done. And I came there in my acid wash jeans and Nike gym shoes and my Saturday Night Live T-shirt and my Jesse Raphael glasses.
That's the picture.
And as I put my street clothing back on, I'm walking out, and he goes, "Hey, I got this new film. I'd like to try this new film. Let me just take a couple shots." Now he had already taken 190 shots, and he takes three with this new film. Which one do I like? The one that he took with this new film, but I have a Saturday Night Live T-shirt on.
Yeah.
Not smart enough to have it airbrushed out. And so I have a headshot of me wearing a Saturday Night Live T-shirt. You know, a show I've never been on.
I watched it, I was like,
a-hole.
Wow, Jimmy, I know he was in the cast. Jimmy must have been a writer for SNL at the time. Yeah. I have no idea what's happening.
No, it's just poor judgment on my part.
He knows someone.
Didn't even know anybody. Didn't even know anybody. Knew it. I bought a shirt at a kiosk in Indianapolis.
Didn't even buy it at the NBC.
No, store. Didn't even write. Didn't even buy it. Didn't even see the show. It was truly at a kiosk in Indianapolis, Indiana.
It's in your headshot.
Yeah.
All right, I'm so
stupid.
I'm so bummed I brought up headshot because that was like 15 minutes of headshot time. Let's go back.
It's entertaining. It's
an amazing story. But we're talking about parenting, Jimmy. And
yes.
I know that you don't talk about it a lot.
I don't. I'll answer any questions you have, though.
We will. Let's go back. So I want to talk about your family. You grew up in Chicago.
Chicago, south side of Chicago. We grew up at roughly 79th and Cicero. Then we moved to 87th in Cicero. Then we moved to 159th in Cicero.
You moved a lot.
My family loves Cicero.
Was that moving out or moving away?
Moving away from the city because, and I'm going to quote the neighborhoods, they're coming, Jim. They got to move, Jim. Yeah, that's good. It's good you're getting further away because they're coming, Jim.
So you only went a few blocks each time? Like numerous blocks away.
Yeah.
And when you say them, it's the same them my father talked about.
It's the, yes. Boston and Chicago have a lot of that in common.
Very. My father, when he's passed, but when he was way older and sick, he had an African-American man who was helping him, who was basically keeping him alive, who was his caregiver. He still said the most god-awful terms.
Did he really?
To him, right in front of him, where I was like, oh my God, Dad. That guy should kill you. He should euthanize. You're really a horrible, what is wrong? But it was the era, and as he got older, they got more cantankerous, and it was really, my father was very Archie Bunkerish.
You know, I will say this in defense for my family wasn't like this. These were the neighbors saying this. We just happened to be moving because our lives were changing. And it just happened to be, you know, that we were moving further away from the city into the suburbs because that's kind of what people do when you get married, you know?
Yeah.
Like when I grew up until I was 8, we lived basically across the street from my grandparents. And then my dad's sister lived down the street. So like the family kind of all lived in this.
Which is great.
I was only 8, so I don't know.
Right, but now that you're a parent, do you have family that live in town?
My mom lives about a mile from me.
So we don't have anybody.
It's wonderful.
So we don't have daycare. I mean, we don't have, you know, help. We have to pay for it.
Yeah, there's more advantages than that to having your family around.
That's
than
the only advantage.
Treating them like the hired hand.
It's slave labor.
Yeah, right?
Parents watching your kids. Were you an only child sibling?
I have a brother, Mike, who is a couple of years younger than me.
That's it.
That's it. Just the two of us. And then three for a lot of years, from 74 to 94, I had three stepbrothers.
Okay.
And then my mom and stepdad got divorced at night, I believe 94.
So your parents got divorced.
My parents got divorced in 74.
You stayed with the mom.
I stayed with my mom. My mom got remarried, and then she was with him for 30 years. And then
they got divorced after 30 years.
Not 94, 2004. I'm sorry.
They got divorced after 30 years.
After 30 years, yeah.
They were like, you know what? I can't take one more day. It's like going to a Broadway musical and being, there's one song left. I'm out. I can't take another second of this.
I'm not 100% sure. I'd ever, I think maybe they both just were, you know, we did this. We raised 5 kids, basically. So now it's time to.
Did they end up with other people?
I don't know. Not my mom. I moved my mom out here and. Like I'm Elvis. I don't know why I said it like I'm Elvis. I moved my mom out here.
I moved her out here, man.
I got to get her in a house, a car, right?
Isn't it interesting, though? Do you have, like, we don't have conversations in my family about, like, only recently has my mom told me, like, crazy stories about my father. And I was always like, that would have been a story I really could have used when I was younger.
Right.
To know genetically where I come from.
Right.
But it's so secretive that families don't. You were a latchkey kid. How old were you when your first parents, when your original parents got your original, the original band
the
broke
original,
up?
Before they broke up and then formed supergroups.
How did that happen?
I guess I was 8, 74.
That's hard.
You know, I don't know if it was. I remember sobbing and crying and my dad holding me, but then I kind of remember going, you know, this probably makes sense. You know, I don't, even when you're 8, you don't
Were they
really
screaming?
Remember.
Do you remember them screaming at each other?
I don't remember.
Well, you're a comic, really. So we know something's amiss.
Sure.
I'm in comedy. There's something off about
But again, I don't know if
films.
You remember much when, between ages of 1 and 7, right? So
no, I know my parents, I was the youngest of 6, and they were together till death. When they said till death, do us part. They meant it. At some point, they were like, all right, I'm pot committed. I can't get out of this thing. So it's odd to me when I see people who, I mean, did you see your dad still a lot? Did you spend weekends?
I still see him.
Did they live down the street from each other?
Say it again?
Did they live down the street from each other?
My dad ended up moving, we lived in a town called Hometown, believe it or not, that was 1 mile by 1 mile.
That's not a real town.
Yeah, right.
No.
It shared 87th Street with Chicago. We were a guardrail away from the city of Chicago. And my dad lived on one side of the town, and we lived on the other side of town. So we'd see my dad quite a bit.
Across the tracks.
Now they cross the tracks.
It's like a Pretty in Pink. It's like a John Hughes film.
Yeah. We run the good side of the tracks.
And he never had conversations about why, now that you're married with, you know, a child. It's,
may have. I won't discuss them here.
Oh, okay. See, yeah, there's been conversations.
There's been conversations, yes.
Okay.
That maybe helped me understand some things in my life. But not really growing up, you know, like...
And were you a happy kid? Did you have a happy childhood?
My mother claims I was this was a note that she gave me once after a stand-up show. Where I got infuriated. How dare you give me notes?
It's always great to get notes.
You don't know my craft. But it was a great note. She said, because I was in my angry phase, and she wasn't wrong about that. I was very angry on stage. And she said, whatever happened to the happy-go-lucky sarcastic kid? And it was like, that is who I was growing up. I was a happy-go-lucky, fun, funny kid. But I was with a little bit of a sarcastic bent.
Yeah.
And I kind of threw that all away because I wanted to be, you know, the edgy guy on stage, and she happened to see a show where I was doing that, and it was, but it did click to go, yeah, let's go back to that guy who was fun.
I get that. My wife actually just said that. It was my birthday like 2 months ago, and I think I was acting like a curmudgeon, and I was just like being miserable, and she was like, where's the cool guy who let stuff slide off his back? And I was like, I miss that guy. It is true. Why do we take things so to heart to get? I was the angry guy. I know the angry guy. I think you go through that phase for a while, you know, because this is a brutal town, and it's no matter how successful you are, there's people we know who are crazy successful, mm-hmm. or whatever. And it's always like, it's hard not to judge yourself against other people. And I went through a phase where I kind of get the angry guy, and yeah, people and I go, stop being angry. It's not as funny.
It's not as funny. And you know, Bill Hicks made it funny, and Dennis Leary. I know there was controversy with them in material, but that's not the point. And Sam Kinison and whatever. I mean, there were.
But some of them are not happy. They like. I don't think Bill Hicks was ever a happy-go-lucky guy, was he?
I don't know. You know what? His friends say that, you know, behind the scenes, you know, Bill was a great guy. He was always laughing and having fun. But, you know, I didn't know him well enough to.
We know the angry comic. I know a bunch of angry comics.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And I'm always like, dude, relax.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's funny. You were a happy-go-lucky kid. Were you close with your mom?
I was very close with my mom.
More so than your dad.
Yeah, because I live with my mom. So I was really close with my mom and probably felt protective or whatever. And, but I would see my dad quite, you know, every weekend we'd see him, and then maybe every other Wednesday or something like that. But then when he moved a mile away or less than a mile away, we would see him all the time. You know, we just ride our bikes over there. And
did he move specifically to be close?
He
to
did.
Kids? Yeah,
he did.
I'm always aware of that. To go, how they decide who gets the kids. Like, I don't think I could get divorced because I couldn't stand to be away from my kids for that period of time. To me, it always blows my mind. I could put up with somebody to be with my kids, and I think maybe some people do that.
I think so, but you know, I think my parents needed to move on. You know, I think it needed to happen, whether there were two kids involved or not. And but my dad made every effort to see us as much as possible. And it was
what was he like as a dad? Was he open and loving? And
he was working three jobs. He was, you know, he had to and going. To, he was working two jobs and going to school for a lot of my childhood.
Really?
And you know, to pay his bills, to pay our bills, and then to better himself so that he could. Provide us with a better life as we got older.
What did he go on to do that he was going to school for?
He ended up being a quality control engineer. He was, you know, he was a some sort of other engineer before that. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things. My dad has explained what he's done. Let's call it 1,000 times.
Sure.
And he explains it in about 9 words. In I'm not listening anymore because I don't understand a word he's saying because I'm a clown. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but you know, he'd say,
and we just don't care.
That always plays into it. Well, great. You're doing okay, Dad. You go golfing every Thursday. Great. That's all I need to hear. But he worked for Nabisco for a long time. Then he worked for Union Carbide for a long time.
Yeah.
Then he ended up working for a company called Viscase.
It's weird doing what we do now. That like my dad was the same. He sold cars. He worked like 60 hours a week at the car dealership. That was it. Raised 6 kids. Came home. And now we live in this world where we're not those guys.
Well, we live in a fantasy.
We are in a fantasy
in this town because it's like when you leave, and I travel the country quite a bit as a comedian. When you see how other dads are handling it or other guys our age and they're being the dad that we kind of envisioned, like our dads were, they're doing that. We've chosen to live here where we're kind of in this safe bubble, even though we live these lives where we don't
is
know
it
if we're
a safe
get,
bubble.
That's what I'm saying. We don't know if we're going to get paid tomorrow.
Is it a safe bubble?
But it is. It kind of is. We live in this family. We all kind of have, it's groupthink a little bit, politically or, you know, morally. You know, whereas you go out on the road and there's different people out there. And I wish them luck. I wish me luck. I wish you luck.
Except Andy's Andy. I don't wish Andy.
You know, okay.
All right. I mean, no luck for Andy.
It's going to be like that today. Huh?
It is going to be a long day.
I was going to wish him luck.
That
was
as a kid, were you a popular kid? Were you into athletics?
No.
Were you the dork who then got your comeback by...
I don't know if I was a dork. I'm guessing... people in school would probably...
You were the smart-ass kid in class.
I was, here I was. My big quote that I think is so fascinating and insist on saying it every time I'm asked is, I wasn't the class clown, I was the kid that made fun of the class clown.
I'm using that.
He did all the heavy
lifting.
Because
I came in second.
But, oh, all right, well...
I was not the class clown either.
Well, I
He's a cop now in New Hampshire.
Right, and because he wasn't funny.
So I said the same thing.
The class clown wasn't funny.
He
and
was
then
not.
He would do it, like I say, he would do all the heavy lifting. And he would go, he'd get up on the desk and he would go, and then I would just go, whatever, ba-ba-da-ba. And then everybody would go, hey! They'd all laugh at my one sentence. And so
that should be in the yearbook too. They should have class clown and then next to it, the guy who makes fun of the class.
But nobody got it. Even to this day, they'll go, oh, remember how great so and so was? I won't even say the guy's name, but.
You're like, no, he wasn't like, funny at
no,
all.
No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't funny. And you know what? He's horrible now.
Yeah. He was doing bits that were somebody else's bits. He was a plagiarist for the most part. Like most class clowns I know were just, they were the guy who did like the Monty Python sketch. And you were like, hey, that's pretty funny. I mean, it's Monty Python. You didn't write that.
But you know what? God, it's fascinating that you say this. He was, yes. But most of the kids, like you want to use Monty Python, like nobody was watching that. So he could come and do Monty Python. Nobody go, how brilliant's Don?
Have you seen his dead parrot sketch?
Right.
It's phenomenal.
I mean, from the mind of a 13-year-old. It's fascinating. It fleshed out. But we're not watching it, so right. You don't have no idea. This guy, who I don't want to say his name because it's
of
not
course,
fair.
Yeah, no.
Call him Don.
I'm going to call him Don. Thank you, Andy. Don would steal from a family member of his who was brilliantly funny. And he would use all of his family member's material. And everybody go, oh, great. Yeah, it was infuriating.
Infuriating.
It for me, it was, because it was like, in my head, I'm like, but I'm actually funny.
Were you always going to be a comic?
I don't. Well, you know what's funny? You say that. And in fact, I got a little heat about this. And I did a printed interview once where I explained this, where it was like, I went to we had a grade school reunion about 10 years ago. No, about seven, who cares? 7 years ago. And I went there, and I was working on Conan, and I had done the Tonight Show, and I had hosted game shows, and I thought, here we go, Daddy's here. You know what I mean? You know, I don't know what you've all done with your lives, but here comes show business. And most of them knew what I had done. You know, they'd seen me on TV or whatever. And then the ones that hadn't were like, oh, that's interesting. And I would go, interesting.
That's not the same
I'm
thing.
On television. And I said this in a printed interview. And it came off like that I wasn't, the premise was they all expected me to do this. So, and I don't know if I did. I don't know if I expected me to be a comedian or whatever. But they all were like, well, yeah, of course. Of course you're a comedian. Like, why? Yeah, we're not surprised or, you know, we're not even that impressed. That's who you were and you've done it. Good for you. He's an accountant and we all knew he'd do that. Like, it was like, but it still was like, what? But please acknowledge I'm living my dream and.
I'm on television.
I'm on television.
I know.
But
I actually had the exact same thing.
Really?
Because I went Navy, and I went to college in Navy and then came into this. And when I was on TV and people saw me, they were like, we always knew you were going to be an actor. I was in the Navy. What are you talking about?
Right?
I never mentioned it once. And they were like, we knew.
Isn't that
even the guys in the Navy, we knew you were going to get out and get an acting. And I was like, wow, I don't remember those years like that at all.
I don't. Well, you know, I did theater and choir, and I did all that stuff, so it wasn't that bananas for them to think it. But as far as me being a stand-up, I would never have. Although we found in unpacking or packing whatever we were doing, I drew a picture at some point in grade school of a believe it or not a brick wall with a stand-up microphone. Sure. Is it a microphone with a light hitting it? But even if the improv hadn't happened yet or whatever, but it was a picture. So, but I.
You were like the Nostradamus of comedy. You saw the future.
I saw the future. But I
he sent it to Bud Friedman. And
Bud, what do you think of this?
The rest is history.
Can you sign this for me unnecessarily? Businessman? I think everybody was like my mom kept that. She goes, look, you knew you always wanted to be a comedian. I'm not 100% sure that was a comedian or
did
like
you ever
a singer.
Did you ever have any other jobs?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I worked at a pizza joint in high school. Then I worked at a gas station in high school, and then I worked at a record store.
Did you go to college?
I did not. I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Oh, so you went? Okay, you got into act.
Well, by that, yeah, I wanted to be I wanted to be Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, I wanted to be Ted Danson.
Boy, we both had that chance too. You know what kept us back?
Talent,
talent.
Yeah, a lot of
discipline.
Discipline. Talent.
ability?
The ability to repeat the same words over and over again.
Work ethic. Yes.
All of it, Andy. All of it kept me away from it. Of, charm, charisma.
Looks for me. Yeah, there's a lot of issues going on.
But I worked for MCA Records.
I didn't know you went to
an
acting school,
right? Yes.
All right, so at that time, were you close with your stepdad?
Well, we lived in the same house. I was as close as he allowed me to be. That wasn't an insult. Not an insult.
I think that answer is actually says everything you need to know about their relationship.
That's not fair.
Ships passing in the night.
Let me say this. No. I'm going to make this very clear. He was the most supportive guy in the world. He wasn't my dad, but he would come and see all my plays. He would come
and
see.
But from the age of eight, I mean, he's.
But it still wasn't my dad.
Sure.
But he was as supportive. He would come and see me do stand up with my mom. Like, he would come to gigs where I would probably suck badly and he would be there. So he was very supportive and very, he was always supportive of me. I mean, again, we were as close as he would allow, but he's a Chicago guy, you know, and Chicago guys don't let you get too close.
No.
And
firm handshake. That's it.
So that's why I want to be very clear. Like, you guys laughed at, like, I lived in the same house. I was as close as he allowed. That's, what it was.
And so your father would come too? Would they all be at the same shows?
Sometimes.
Were they
awkward?
Was it awkward?
Sure. Of course. They didn't get along.
They did not get along.
No. They kind of do now, you know, as everybody's aging and
and they're both divorced. So they have something in common.
Yeah. Well, my dad's remarried.
But they go, hey, remember that lady we were both married to?
I don't know if they're hanging out. I don't know.
I think they're having a beer down in Wrigleyville.
They're on our next podcast.
We're podcasting them both. Was your stepdad a disciplinarian? Were you like, you're not my father, you can't tell me what to do? Were you just a cool kid?
No, I was not a cool kid. I was an asshole.
Yeah, I feel like that.
I was, my stepfather's big line was, I'm not your father, but I married your mother, and as long as you're here, you will show her respect. I'm paraphrasing that, but that was basically
the gist of it. That's a pretty good statement.
Yeah. And then I would probably go, yeah, okay, Ron, and then be an asshole.
Were you like me when you were younger? Were you... Your brain would have the fastest, smart-ass comment, and you didn't know how to edit yet. So when I was in school,
when I was
a kid, it just kept coming out. And the teacher would go, you need to shut up. And I was like, I don't think I can do that. And they finally just sometimes would throw me out of class. I couldn't. If I had a smart-ass comment, it had to come out. It had to come out.
Here's the other quote that I've been, ever since high school, I would always get sent to the dean. And I would always hear, and then finally, I'll tell you the quote.
Dean? What kind of private little priss school were you at?
It was a public school in Old Forest, Illinois. There was a dean and a principal and a guidance counselor of some sort.
Of a dean at a high school.
Probably a nurse.
Yeah.
Oh, there was certainly a school nurse. I would go down there with my feelings hurt.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks a lot. That was a great jump.
But, here's the quote that I said to them after when I got sent down there for, let's call it the 3,000th time. I would go, you know what I think it is, fellas? Because it was the two deans. There was an assistant dean as well. And I would say, I go, you know what I think it is, fellas? I go, I'm basically a good kid. I just don't know when to shut up. And they go, we were just going to say that. And in my head, I'm going, I know, because you've been telling me that for 4 years. Like, that was what they would always say to me.
I was so the same. One teacher, he took me out of my English class and he put me down in the special ed class.
Wait, what?
He put me in the special ed class, Mr. Sanderson, like, freshman year in high school, took me out. He's like, I can't take you anymore. Put me in the special ed class. And so I went down there and I was like, whatever. And I sat there for the day. And then the next day I went back to go to his class and he was like, no.
No, you're
there until I come. Left me there for like a week.
Oh my God.
I made some great friends. It was actually a really, I was great in that class. I did well in that
course,
class.
Yeah, you excelled.
Really well. I did really well. And when I came back, I kind of learned to shut my mouth. That guy later cut me from the baseball team too. And my mother was so pissed at that dude because I was good at this. God, that's my own story though. But let's get back to Jimmy Pardo's story.
Real fast, there was a teacher named John Tierney, who he was a gym teacher, but you know, gym teachers also taught health for some reason back in the 80s.
That's right, they did.
And, you know, the guy that knows how to throw a volleyball.
You're going to get pubes.
That was it.
And let's go play some volleyball.
Well, let's go do it. But I was doing my antics or whatever, and he came over and he just grabbed the school desk and he just grabbed it and was like, shut up! You shut up! Will you please shut up? And it was like, and I'm just sitting there, and it's like, you know, when you're a kid, it's like, you're being a dick. He can't take it. He comes and shakes, and you're scared to death inside, but you still have to win. So I then said something else, and he's like, get out of here! But then you walk, and then you feel like you're the cool kid, but then as soon as that door closes, you're like, you feel like an you
I
feel
such
like,
a dick.
Right. Like you feel like oh I just made a fool of myself. I didn't win that.
Nowadays that guy would be fired. Somebody would have videotaped that, popped it up, and that dude would have been fired. And they would have said, "No, no, Pardo won't shut up."
Shut up.
But in a clip, they'd go, "That guy, you can't do that to a kid." But then if you showed the previous 4 years of you not shutting up, you go, "Oh no, that guy's good."
Yeah.
That guy
of him, about the 4 years of him not doing that,
Of
him just like going, "Oh,
yeah, we're really similar." Yeah. That's funny. So you were a smart ass. When did you went to acting school? But not to be a stand-up, to be an actor.
To be an actor. I didn't know what to do. Like, I didn't go to college. Everybody else went away to college. I was managing record stores right out of high school, which I did for 2 years. And then it was like, what am I going to do? So I went to Second City, studied there for, I don't know, maybe 6 months. And then...
Taking classes, whatever.
Yeah, taking classes at Second City. And
jumped right into it, right out of high school, man.
No, but it wasn't right. It was like 2 years after high school.
Did you have to audition into the American, what is it, Academy?
Yeah, but I think if you have a... check that signed by
that's the audition process.
I think it is. I mean, they have you read some monologues, but I think
let me hear you read your check. Pay two. You're in.
You're not. You know, Adam Scott, the actor, who's very successful. He and I. He also went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, and we kind of have a similar story. Like, yeah, we auditioned and we went, but I think everybody gets to go.
I don't think that's true, but that's funny.
I think it is.
And so at this time, it seems like your whole dad, it seems like you just had an idyllic childhood, even though you had...
No! No!
No?
I'm 5'4" now. I was, 3'7" in high school? And no, Jesus Christ, it was horrible.
Do you think that that's maybe why you...
Yes. No question about it.
Yeah,
I would talk myself out of getting... I would talk them out of beating me up. And I would just, you know, I would fool them with words and being funny and clever. And... that's what got me girls and got me not beat up, you know. And
did you ever get into fights?
I would talk my way out.
I did the same
every single time. Or there was always a burnout. I don't know if you use that phrase.
No, there were burnouts. We called them rats and jocks were our two groups.
We were burnouts and jocks.
Burnouts and jocks.
Yeah. And so the burnouts, they always found me funny. And so like if somebody wanted to kick my ass, one of them would always step in. And even the jocks would be afraid of the burnouts because, you know, we don't know if they're packing. You know what I mean?
That's back in the day, the jocks were cool. But the, in the... outsiders, the one who gets stabbed is he's the soche.
Right?
He gets stabbed.
Yeah.
It's not the rats that get
it. It's not the outsiders.
It's not the outsiders.
So that's kind of what it was. Like one of those guys would always like if I'd be, like it was obvious, like I was cornered and I was about to get the shit kicked out of me. And by the way, and I probably should have.
Oh, many times.
They would always come in and go, "What are you doing? Look at him. Look, what are you going to do to the little guy?" And then they would take him and throw them against the lockers and I would walk away and then go, "All right." You know, not realizing what a pussy I am. You know, like.
Have you ever been in a fight?
One time we did a fight's a strong word. We were a guy by the name of Mike Duty, who ended up moving to Ireland. We did that where you grab the back of a bumper of a car and the car
of course
pulls around on the snow.
Kmart parking lot.
Skitching, I guess we called it.
Yeah. Safe, by the way.
What a horrible idea.
Terrible.
We did that once, and the father, the guy yells out. He's got two kids in the car. He goes, "Don't stop it." And we're like, "Yeah, okay." Grab back on. He goes, "Stop it." And he slams the brakes on. Two kids come out and just start kicking the shit out of both me and Mike Duty. And that was really the only fight I was ever in.
Did you get a good punch in or just?
No, I was on the ground.
Yeah, me too.
Probably my arms pinned, just taking it. Yeah, no, I wasn't. No, I was never in a fight.
So were you hanging with the burnouts? Did you start drinking early?
I had my group of in grade school, it was very small classes and everybody was kind of friends with everybody.
Were you in high school, did you party?
No.
Didn't?
No, I didn't have a beer. I didn't take a sip of beer maybe until I was, I took one sip of beer in high school. It wasn't until I was out of high school that I actually probably had a full beer. But I haven't done drugs ever in my life.
My senior in high school, I was drunk.
Well, because you look at your head.
It was New Hampshire, though. You couldn't, everyone drank.
This was south side of Chicago. They were all drinking. I just knew how to control myself.
Why? And you were the only guy who didn't drink?
No, there was a group of us.
Nerds.
Yeah, well, we had our own world. I was in a band in high school, so, you know, we would...
You were in a band and you didn't drink?
Well, none of us did. That wasn't our scene,
What
man.
Kind of band is that, Andy?
A boring band.
Yeah.
Not a successful one.
Not a successful one.
I think what held that band back, by the way, was the guitarist was great, the bass player was great, the drummer was great, the keyboardist was great, the vocalist was horrible.
Oh, who was the...
Oh, that was me. Yeah, Thank you for asking, Andy.
And you know who the bassist was? Fred Savage.
Ha ha!
He's...
also the director of the band.
Yeah, he directed the band.
Musical director, Fred Savage.
So what a crazy, crazy childhood. So let's jump to stand up then. You obviously at some point were like, this is crazy. I got to get on stage.
It was, here's the fun story. I'll tell it as quickly as possible. I had done Second City, blah, blah, blah. I'd done American Academy of Dramatic Arts. I'd moved back to Chicago, mainly because I was homesick. But I always thought I was going to come back out here. Like, I still had furniture and everything at my apartment. And I was like, I'll be back in 6 months, fellas. And didn't come back for, 10 years or whatever. But I was managing a record store in Naperville, Illinois. And Bob Odenkirk was a customer. He wasn't Bob Odenkirk yet. He was just a customer. And
his name was Bob Odenkirk,
but he wasn't famous yet. No. Andy,
he hadn't done the Ben Stiller show.
He hadn't done anything. He was just a guy in a group. I think they're called Duck Logic. He was like in an improv or a sketch group.
Sounds like a group he'd be in.
Yeah, does it? But he would come in every Saturday because his parents lived in Naperville. He would come in and visit, and come in to visit his parents from the city. He'd always stop at the record store to buy something, and we would end up making each other laugh. And finally, he just said, "I got to tell you, you're the funniest guy I've ever met. You should do stand-up." And I was like, yeah, people tell me that, but I don't know. He's like, you should do it. He goes, my roommate, a guy by the name of Bill Gorgo, who still does comedy in Chicago, does a booked show on Saturday nights. In fact, I'm on it tonight. You should come and watch it. And if you dig it, I'll have him give you a spot on the show next week. So I show up to the thing just to watch. And a guy named Bill Leff, who is now a radio personality in Chicago, I went to high school with Bill. And I walked in and he goes, what are you doing here? Are you on the show? I said, no, I came to watch, Odenkirk invited me. He's like, well, you got to be doing this. You were the funniest guy in high school. You got to do stand-up. And it was like, all right. And so the next week I started doing stand-up. So that was...
Did you get up with any jokes or did you just get up and...
No, I got up with jokes. Horrible. Horrible. Like we all.
Did you? I got up with
what I thought was 15 minutes of material that I went through in about four. And, it was horrible.
Did you just jump right to where you're from? How was that the next?
I didn't do crowd work yet. I was terrified. Busy trying to be Paul Reiser.
Were you terrified on stage?
No.
Never, right?
No, because I was in theater. And so I was that terrified. Never scared me.
It scared me.
It should have scared me. I wish I had.
Like, I see people today and I'm like, wow, they're terrible. But that confidence is so amazing.
Dude, I did a show. Where was I? First of all, I just called you dude, so you know I mean business.
Yeah.
It was at the Viper Room. These two young guys went up prior to my set. Like,
ate it.
What's that?
Ate it.
No.
Oh, crud.
They were more comfortable than I am today, 30 years in. I mean, it's like, how dare you be that comfortable 7 months into your career, you jerk? It's
crazy. And then they'll be like, ugh. You'll be like, how long have you been doing this? Like, they act like it's been a long time. Like, yeah. Oh, it's been forever. It's been like, I don't know, 9 months, maybe
like
10
months.
Yeah.
Yes. And it angers me. Yeah. How comfortable it's not.
We're going to cut all this out anyway. No one's ever going to listen to this. All right, so jump to.
Yes.
That's the name of the podcast is Father Time.
Yeah, we talked about my dad for about a minute.
I know. I tried to. Some people, it's so odd. Some people don't. Here's the other thing. We grew up in a generation where we just don't. It's like, what can you say about your dad? I don't know. He worked a lot and, You know,
my
dad never showed me how to shave. Like, no, there was no. Like, he was always there. Good dad provided for me, but we weren't like on a personal level of like, hey, let's go build a hut. Basically, he said, go mow the lawn or something like that, but we didn't hang.
I hung with my dad because I only saw him on weekends. So he would.
He felt guilty. He had to take you bowling.
As my dad said, he says today, I think everybody was on their best behavior. Like, we didn't really ever know each other.
Right.
Now, the reason I don't talk about my dad or my mom or really anybody is that my opinion is that they didn't sign up for this. I did.
Right.
So, like, I don't talk about them in my act. They're not, I mean, there's, you know, obviously all of our families have crazy stories.
Right.
But, you know, my brother or my mom, my stepdad, like they didn't go, we're all in the open mic with
you. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Please be free to tell that story about the day that something went really bad in my life.
So that's kind of why I'm vague with, Well,
some people are.
Yeah.
I'm not. I tell every horrible
story. Well, your dad's dead. And maybe that'll all change when my family's gone. But as of right now,
My mother's 92. She does the craziest. I mean, there's stories from her, just lunacy. She's a crazy woman, but she's great. She raised six of us, and I'm close with her. But now she's starting to tell me crazy stories that my dad did when I was.
But are they real or is she 92? Maybe
I don't know. Mm. I don't know. She told me recently that she almost divorced him like year two, and I was like, really? She's like, oh yeah, he was out boozing at the bars. I was home with the kids, and yeah, she was telling me crazy stories.
But
like,
she didn't.
No, she didn't. Otherwise, I wouldn't be. You'd be sitting alone with Andy.
No, I'd be here with Andy.
Yeah, you'd be here with Andy.
Right? Well,
so and let's jump to you being podcast. A dad then.
Yeah, just be talking about school nurse.
Because here's what's also cool is about
this.
That's all I got.
It's what? It's
go ahead.
You're a dad.
I am.
You have a beautiful young son.
He's the greatest.
Oliver. I know you. We've talked before, and I can see you light up when you start to talk about him. And I think that that's more our generation than theirs, because I'm the same. When I talk about my little girls, I cry. Like, I start to tear up. She likes to paint. Hannah started to paint. Talk about when you first became a dad. You got married to Danielle that I've known forever.
Who you knew before I knew.
That's right. I knew her long before you.
She was in the comedy world, and that's how we met, of course.
I love you two together. I was like, oh, what a great parent.
The day that she said yes to me saying, do you want to go on a date? Which is the greatest day of my life.
Yeah. She might have saved your life, I feel like.
I don't disagree with any of that.
No, I don't.
I don't disagree. I was a drunken, I didn't drink in high school. I made up for it in the 90s. Holy.
Oh, I kept it going. I drank in high school and then college.
And the 90s.
And then, the 90s. Sweet Jesus. That was, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember a lot of things.
They were good times, though. I mean, I get weird, hazy memories here and there. That was good.
I wish I would have kept a journal. That's the one mistake I wish I would have.
If we had video phones, then you would have a video journal.
Well, I had a pen and paper, Jamie. I could have done that. I could have written it down.
You don't even write your jokes. What makes you think you're going to sit in journal? Jimmy Pardo, journaler. Not happening.
I would have the greatest book in the world had I done it, though.
Like, no.
Being a road comic, living in your car and going to one-nighters and the crazy stuff.
That was the kind of life you were leading. You were like, you didn't care how much you made, or you were just really about, I'm going to go out, I'm doing this, I'm on the road.
Well, I also thought I was in show business. I didn't know I was just doing crappy bar one-nighters.
Well, you were in show business.
But it was like, because I was leaving Chicago and going to Ohio and doing a bar, it was like, somehow that was a show to me, as opposed to going to the bar near my house that did comedy. That was, well, that's just going to Lassen's. That's right. Not real comedy. Going to Champs in Portsmouth, that's comedy. Stupid.
Did you have girlfriends before that? Were you?
Of course.
They stayed at home and you were off.
I lived with my girlfriend in the 90s. We lived together for 6 months and she had enough of my BS. And
I lived with a girl for a year and she'd had just about enough. Well, isn't that the old joke about being a comic? It's like when they first meet, it's like, everything's so funny. And then at the end, it's like, everything's a fucking joke to you.
And you're never here.
And
for me, it was
the
road.
You were a massive road guy. And even now, talking about that, like I kind of stopped doing the road, really, because I can't stand to be away for that period of time.
It's rough.
It's hard, right?
It's especially hard now. And I'll get back to your question about what it was like to first be a dad. But like now that my son's 9 and he understands I'm leaving, like when he was a baby, it was like, okay, he just doesn't get, dad, he doesn't know a minute from a day,
Yeah.
But then as he started figuring it out, it's like, God, this is rough, man. Him running up and hugging me when I'm going to leave and, like, oh, I'm going to be gone for 2 days, which doesn't sound like a lot, but damn it.
Two days.
And I'm not one of those dads that likes, but don't you like the peace and quiet? No, I don't. I like being with my wife and son. I love it.
I do too. So, I know. It's sweet to hear because I know how many road comics do we know? They go, I come back home on Monday morning. I do some laundry. I say hi to the kids. I'm out again Wednesday.
I don't know how they
like
do it.
Like 45 weeks a year.
I know.
And I go, what? I don't know. I just love being with the kids so much. So it always amazes me when it's hard. All of a sudden, you loved going on the road before, and now it's like just a necessity. It's money.
It's money.
It's a pay. Yeah,
and I'm very lucky in that the podcast, I've got a lot of fans that I did not have 10 years ago.
Right.
So it's, I get to get out and meet fans.
Yeah.
And
you're not going out wondering, oh my, like for me, trying to draw is brutal. So I'm like peeking out going, please, please, please come in. But you guys are so established.
We're doing okay.
When you tour, it's amazing. Like you had the 5 o'clock show in Burbank. Basically packed.
We did. We packed it.
I know.
It was
amazing.
Crazy. And you were here right before we did that.
Yeah.
And we're like, there might be 10 people sitting there. We have no idea. And then we all of a sudden we do the show and like the manager comes back and goes, it's jammed. And we're like, no, seriously, it's jammed. Let's do this thing.
So were you just a crazy road comic when you and Danielle got married?
Yeah, I was still working the road a lot when we got married.
Do you guys immediately
know? When we got married, I had the 2 TV shows, but I was still doing the road a little bit.
Not just one, 2 TV shows.
I had 2 TV shows on at once. I was the Bob Saget of the third tier of cable.
What were the 2 shows?
National Lampoon's Funny Money. That's the game show where Big Laughs Get You Big Bucks, and then gets
canceled.
I remember
Funny Money. Was that GSN?
It was GSN.
GSN.
And then Movies at Our House on AMC.
That's right.
Before they went on to do this bullshit Mad Men and Breaking Bad. This is back when they showed Short Circuit and they had me and Rachel Quaintance interrupting it. quality television.
I totally remember that now because I know Rachel too. That's really funny.
That was the greatest.
See, with two shows on the air
at the exact same time, and then we found out that neither were coming back. I think a week before my wedding. Like, I think that's when it was like, bad news.
You're
not getting picked up.
And I'm getting married.
I do.
Were you guys, my wife and I, we talked about stuff before we got married. But she, you know, she would say things like, oh, we don't need an expensive wedding. I don't know if we need to have kids. And maybe we should just elope. And I don't really need a big engagement ring. And then everything changed. We got married and she was like, oh, we're having kids, right? Right now.
Mm. So you had it immediately after you were married?
Pretty quickly.
But you got married a little bit older.
Yeah, right? I'm very old, James. I'm very old.
You look great. And doesn't you look great?
Yeah, everybody
looks great.
I was
to me.
50 with two kids under the age of three. So
wait, what? Say it again?
I was 50 with two kids under the age of three.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Should my stomach make that noise? My stomach can't respond to this properly.
I just turned 52.
You look great.
Thanks.
You look.
James, thanks. I really appreciate that.
You look great, James.
Shut up, Andy. No, I mean that in a sweet, generous way.
And did you work at Knutson?
No.
All right, go on.
That'll get well. This, trust me, this whole thing will cut down to 15 minutes. So you get married. How soon did you have kids?
Oh boy, it was a while. We got married in 2004. Oliver was born. I guess it was 3 years. Oliver was born in 2007, so 3 years.
Was it a surprise or was there?
No, we were trying.
You were trying.
We were trying, and then the big story was that we were told it was going to be a girl. And
really?
Yeah.
Did you paint the room pink?
Oh yeah.
There's got to be a lawsuit. Can you sue for that?
No, because you know what I think happened? Here's what we think happened. That the first person, what are they called?
Peaker.
Nope. That doesn't sound medical to me.
It feels medical.
What the hell?
Doctor?
Bio-peaker?
Doctor is, we're getting closer, but this is a specific.
Obstetrician? Gynecologist?
When they're looking at your.
Yeah, it's ultrasound.
The ultrasound. The technician. The ultrasound
that was a long
way to go.
I think people got it with
peaker. Should have just said peaker.
Yeah, it was pretty fine.
That person, we think, made the mistake and said, oh, you're having a girl. And then for the next whatever it is when they're asking, like every doctor would go, well, you guys know the sex. We would just go, yeah.
So they never check
it. And they would never confirm it. Like, well, so you know it's a boy. Like that would never be a follow-up.
Boy.
So yeah, we painted the room pink. We got all sorts of girls' clothing at the baby shower. And then when the baby was born, the doctor, who was not our doctor because he was born at 2 a.m, it was the doctor on call. It's like, hey, congratulations, you have a baby boy. And Danielle and I are like, what? And she goes, oh, were you not expecting a boy? Oh, we were told it was a girl. And she's like, oh, my God. And the whole hospital was talking about it. It was very exciting.
For them.
For them.
For them. Yeah, for you, you're like, we have clothes we have to return.
That Danielle already washed because as a new mom, you're told you got to wash things immediately so the child doesn't have anything on it.
So you can't get anything back. That's funny.
I think we ended up giving to a friend years later, but... yeah, my friend Pat came over. We painted the
room
blue immediately.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
My wife did the ultrasound. I mean, she kept going back to get the 3D ultrasound where you would see the picture of the kid, and you're like, oh, man, I hope that kid doesn't look like that.
Yeah.
That looks terrible.
My kid looked great.
Right out of the chute.
Oh, he looked great. First headshot.
Do you give him grief and go, we thought you were a girl?
You know what we have? I don't even know if we may have told it to him, but I don't think I think he was like, come on, Dad, if we even did. But we don't. We don't tease him about it.
Does he know that his original name was Olivia?
He does not know that either. He does not.
And he pops in.
It was certainly in the hopper.
He got you good on that one.
Did he?
No, I don't know.
You may not know what got him good means.
I don't know anything.
That's not fair. And he's having fun.
I got nothing.
So the birth went, everything went fine? Everything.
Well, you know what's funny? The birth was, this isn't funny.
This whole thing doesn't have to be funny.
Said, you know what's funny, and this is not
funny. I mean, I know everything out of your mouth actually comes out funny. We talked about that. I can't even say like sad things to people because they start laughing, and they go, no, seriously, it's someone's passed.
Yeah, and I said, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm not being a sarcastic dick.
No, you are.
No, but I'm not.
You are.
I overheard the nurse and the doctor talking about something with the pregnancy as we were like at midnight. And I didn't hear all of it. All I heard was, should I have the ER standing by? And I was like, what the shit does this mean? But I didn't share it with Danielle because I don't want her panicked.
Right.
So as the baby was being born, I had a knot in my stomach of, oh, my God, is something going to be wrong?
What's going to happen? Right.
So as the baby's being born, like they're so used to the dad passing out from the blood or whatever. Like none of that was bothering me. I was just like, oh my God, please just be healthy, just be alive, really, based on this other thing. And So they're like, you don't okay over there, Dad? You need to sit down? Some of the fathers don't. I'm like, you said something about my kid not being right. Like,
right.
And so then as soon as the baby was born and started crying, and oh, it's very healthy, like, then I was fine.
Right.
Did you ever ask them what they were talking about?
You know what? I never did, and I probably should have. I don't know. You know what? I kind of did. What ended up happening was, like, I guess they put something on their head to hear the heartbeat or something, and maybe that thing
up had, in?
Yeah, I believe the so.
Internal. Yeah.
And then maybe that had fallen off. Something, and then so they thought there was no longer a heartbeat, maybe, I think, Andy?
I mean, we couldn't even come up with the words ultrasound technician.
That's right. Yeah.
So when we start to talk medical, it's probably not
broke his thing.
Accurate.
I think the thing was broken.
Had you ever seen a childbirth before?
No, of course not.
Isn't that odd?
Yeah.
I've seen every animal, giraffes, whales, lions, everything on TV. Never had seen a human birth before. And it changed everything. All of a sudden, I watched my baby get born, and I was like, oh, that... You know what? Everything starts to make sense. Oh, that's why everything's designed that way.
It's
so crazy.
It really is. And then, in fact, I was just talking about this with Oliver yesterday, as I was telling how big he's getting. And, it's like, I used to be able to hold you from here to here. You would fit in that little area. And I would just, he goes, well, what was it like when I was first born? And I was like, I just held you and you were just right there looking up at me. And, you know, it's like, and I got all teary-eyed even yesterday telling him about it. It was the...
I'm getting teary-eyed just listening to it. Because I do the same.
Greatest, and he's just there, and just...
That's one of our things. Hannah, our three-year-old, will come up, and she'll go, tell me again about the day I was born, because that's my wife's big thing. She loves, they talk about the day a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. I just saw her little head come out. Did you cut the cord?
I did. I don't remember any of that.
And then that knot in your stomach, I don't think mine ever went away. I'm still...
You still have that?
I'm terrified all the time for them.
I was... I guess I am. Like, even yesterday, I was over-explaining the toaster. You'd never put a fork in here if something falls. And, if the bread breaks in half, you don't put a fork in there. You unplug it for it. And Albert's just like, Dad, I wouldn't put a fork in there. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I know that I...
Are you the neurotic one?
In that
more
regard,
so than your wife,
you never put a fork in an outlet. Why would he ever put a fork in an outlet?
They do,
but my son was never that way. He's never been that guy. Like, we did all that safety nonsense that other dads tell you to do: lock up all your cabinets, put plexiglass in front of the VCR. Whatever you had to do, we did all that. My son never touched anything anyway, and it was like, what a waste of
what
money.
A good
and time.
Kid.
He's a pretty good.
Ours
kid.
Are the awesome. They're the opposite. They touch everything and climb to the highest point in every room.
No, that's not.
Oh, Hannah's going to walk out the door one day and just walk down the street.
Oh,
like,
no.
She's like, we have to watch the doorknobs and stuff. She's a runner.
You know what you do? You put oil on them so she can't turn them.
I'll put oil on her. I'll just oil her hands.
Yeah, there we go.
With mittens. I'll just put mittens
little,
on her.
Little moist mittens.
It's the chains that seem cruel.
Yeah, well, she'll know not to run anymore, won't she? She'll learn her lesson.
She'll learn. Remember there was a time, and by the way, I probably felt this way, speaking of the chain. Remember when the leash,
I still think it's a great idea.
Great idea. But remember, when I was a single guy, we were like, look at that, they're putting a kid on a leash. How offensive is that? That's the greatest.
It's the greatest invention of all time.
Are you kidding me?
Here's the problem. Some kid's going to hang himself on it. Mm. There'll be, here's the one, like, there's always the one story on the internet my wife finds. And
right.
goes, apparently children can choke on any item. I'm like, it's an orange. She cannot choke on an orange. She's not going to get it in her mouth. You can't put it near her. Like, my wife's very neurotic about stuff. Is that, I mean, obviously you're explaining a toaster to an 8-year-old.
I think I'm more neurotic in that regard than Danielle. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
I get scared. I'm not exaggerating this. It'll sound like I'm being funny, but I'm not. Like, if I'm at Target with Oliver and he decides for literally 1.1 second to stand directly behind me, I'm looking for the cops to find out where my son went to.
Is that right?
Like, I'll go, so anyway, Oliver, and he's like, I'm right here, Dad. I'm like, oh, okay.
But as an 8-year-old, you were on your bike and you were gone probably for 12 hours of the day.
Boom. Right?
So, I mean, what's the right answer then? Because it's like, it's so changed from when we were young.
But what, did it change? Or are we just more aware? Like, I mean, I know it's a chicken egg thing.
We're more neurotic, I think, about, they didn't even have cameras back then everywhere. Like, now you know, it would be really hard to get the kid out of Target. If you were going to snatch a kid, it's really hard to do. And we're saying, like,
but
I don't mean it like I'm trying to get it done.
But if they did it and they were able to get past the cameras and everything and got it in a car, and then that car zips away.
The car's on film. There's
I know
a
it's
Amber
all on
alert.
Film, and maybe they'll get
sure.
the kid, but will they get there in time?
I don't know.
So that's, I know what you're saying.
But
I
parents,
have the same
thoughts. Did my parents feel the same way in the store?
No, they let you run around and play hide and seek.
I used to go play in the escalator.
Right.
I don't know why I loved escalators, and my mom would be like, okay, have fun in the escalators, and then she'd shop, and I would just go up and down the escalators for a while and then come back. That's...
You know why? Because an escalator was a fascinating thing back in the 70s.
It's pretty amazing.
Yes.
Back in the 70s, yeah.
Yes, that's why.
Yeah. Were you always like this as soon as he was born? Were you very hands-on?
Yeah. As hands-on.
Big diaper changer. Like
I loved it. I loved
changing never
the
changed
diaper.
A diaper. Six kids, never changed one.
Who's he, Eddie Murphy? Why would he never?
Eddie Murphy doesn't change diapers.
No, and he brags about it.
Well, he's high all the time. Would you want him to?
I don't know
diaper?
Anything about it. Eddie
Wait,
Murphy's,
what? Okay,
lifestyle.
I went too far.
I don't know anything about him. I saw Bowfinger.
It's too late. You're not going to be in an Eddie Murphy film.
You don't know that.
Actually, that's true. You could be easily be in an
he
Eddie.
He could be desperate.
He's
in a
still
year
one of
two.
The funny. Never changed a diaper.
No, that's right. That's what he claims.
I guess. I said I never would, and I signed apparently a piece of paper beforehand with my friend, the bartender at the Lobster, who after I had the baby, then pulled it out. He had apparently saved this napkin I had signed that said, I will never change a diaper. At the age of 47, I said that. And then by 50, I was changing a couple diapers a day.
Did you have to pay money? Was that a money bet of some sort, a wager?
There was a wager. I think it was a bottle of whiskey or something, which never got paid, but it was, yeah.
Sounds like you owe that guy some money.
I actually owe that guy a bottle of whiskey.
But did you, people think I'm crazy. I love changing the diaper.
That's an idiot thing to say.
I loved it.
That's the stupidest thing anyone's ever. Nobody loves to.
I loved it. I loved
the poopy diapers? Like a number, like a pee-pee diaper, yeah. Nobody wants to change a poo-poo diaper.
I didn't mind ever. I honest to God didn't. I liked it. I saw it as a time to bond with my son. It didn't
over
bother
poop?
Me. You clean it up and you're done. That part's done in 2 seconds and then you're...
It's not 2 seconds. It's,
my
please.
Son keeps it clean to a does toilet
he,
area, yeah.
Does he keep it nice and firm? There's no messies.
That's right. We was,
no up the backs. And
I was
the,
giving him fiber gummies at an early age.
Did you ever have, like you say, you know, he was standing behind you. Did you ever have terrifying moments? Some of the other people who've done it, Joel Murray talks about he saved his son from a pool.
Like no,
was,
really?
He's on the bottom, not breathing, and he had to jump in and pull him out and resuscitate him. And
no.
Other people, yeah. We've all had those terrible. I dropped mine when I was posing for a selfie holding the baby. Luckily, it was in the backyard. It was on grass. And my wife's like, you dropped the baby. I was like, I tried to catch her. Like
oh,
I was
no.
trying to catch her as she fell. And she was like, bonk. And I was like, oh, I think I just dropped the baby.
I'm sure Danielle would be able to say, like, my answer to you is no, but I'm sure she would go, well, what about the time, blah, blah.
No emergency rooms, no
stitches, well, we brought him
no
to an emergency room
arm.
Once, and we raced him to the emergency room because he was listless. And then when we got him there, even the woman's like, oh, yeah, he seems listless. And then by the time the doctor came out and was like, where's this listless baby? He was... wide awake and fine. And she goes, do you think maybe he was just tired? There's a chance that's possible. Yes, he may have just been tired. But we were the dumb sitcom
I like
parents.
That the official diagnosis yeah. was listlessness.
That honestly, listless. I feel like that's going to be my cause of death.
Listlessness?
Listlessness. Yeah, yes. Just like what happened? He just faded away.
It was...
He seemed tired that day.
But it was scary. It was very... That was scary.
Well, listless, if you bumped your head, you know, if you smash your head and you have a concussion, you're listless. Yeah, but all of a sudden it was just he was tired that day?
I guess so. There was nothing wrong with him. But
my wife's the queen of going. She'll go to the doctor for anything. Like, yeah, something's happening, and she's going to the doctor. And, yeah, I guess it's better safe than sorry. But sometimes you're like, if there's not a huge fever, chances are the babies get sick. That's what they do.
Babies get sick. Teenagers get sick. Yeah. Adults get sick.
Are you looking forward to the teen years?
No.
You have such a well-behaved son.
He's a pretty good kid.
He hasn't done anything horrible where you were like, he was only 8.
No.
He didn't, like, get a hobo stick and a kerchief and run away?
Not yet.
Over his shoulder?
Not yet.
And no crazy moments of fear, no...
For me?
Yeah.
I think I live every minute afraid. You know, I'm afraid of him being bullied. That scares the hell out of me. Or of him being the bully. That might even scare me more than him being bullied.
I think that scares me worse. I've seen my second one kind of smash another kid in the face. Oh! The park. They're in like 19 months, so it's acceptable at that age. But you're always like, are you going to be the bully? Or is your son smarty? Smarty. Is he funny like you, like a smartass?
He is, well, again, you know, my wife is a comedy writer, and he's the child of two clowns. So
usually they go the opposite direction.
He did not. He is, I wish he'd go the opposite direction.
Do you hear him say stuff, and you're amazed how intelligent the joke is for an 8-year-old?
Yeah.
Where you're like, wow, that's really...
He's pretty sharp. Good. Yeah. But he's so far so good. He's a good kid, and hopefully he will not go down the other path.
Do you one is more than enough?
Yes. No. Yes. I'm able to admit that I am self-involved enough that a second child would eat into my time.
And are you?
Sure.
Oh, I feel like if I was financially secure, I think I'd have as many as I could.
Really?
Like if you had like enough help and assistance and stuff, I think the more the merrier. But I don't know.
Your mom didn't have help.
She had no help.
Neither
we talked all the time. It's crazy some of the things she tells me she did, like travel cross country with two kids in a car. Back in the day, like nowadays, you wouldn't even think of doing the things they did then.
But so I hear what you're saying, and maybe it would be different if we were financially secure. But the second, we also, I don't want this to sound asshole-y, but it's like we're so lucky on how great Oliver is. Like
you don't want to rock the apple cart.
We got this one right. We got lucky that this guy is who he is, and maybe the second one would be a handful. And again, I'm self-involved enough where I'm happy that my son doesn't give me trouble.
All right, okay, all right. I'm gonna ask you a few questions.
Here we go
to wrap this up. It's not like your questions.
Let me give you 45 more headshot stories.
No, we're gonna cut that all. It's all.
You're gonna cut the? Why would you?
No,
cut that?
I'm
it's gold.
Joking.
It's gold.
It's gold. I love that story. Saturday Night Live. Did you ever audition for Saturday Night Live?
I bought a shirt. I was made fun of in this world. They're not going to give me an audition.
You're not a character guy. You're a character, but you're you.
I ain't got any new characters.
I don't do.
Colin Quinn did characters?
He does Colin Quinn.
Norm MacDonald did characters other than Burt Reynolds?
He did a good Burt Reynolds.
Great Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, that's right. You're actually right. Actually, we got to get you an audition for
I should be on there. Because what, yeah, what the guy in their 40s? You guess an audition for
They should hire one old guy to pick up the old guy parts,
right?
Daryl Hammond keeps going back. He's like 85 years
probably,
old.
They keep trotting him out there. They put Bobby Moynihan in a
Alec
gray
Baldwin's
wig.
Alec apparently a cast member at this point.
He's doing great.
Yeah. Besides that, in Match Game, he's really got it going on.
Sure.
All right. What is one thing that you hope your kids never find out about you?
Oh Jesus! What's one thing I hope my kids never find out about me? One thing about me. Oh, boy. Oh, that I'm not the greatest. Like, because right now he's 9. He thinks that, you know, your dad's super. He's Superman. And I hope that day never comes where that changes. You know, I don't want him to be delusional, but I also don't. I love the fact that.
It's pretty amazing.
One person on this planet thinks I'm great.
It's such a good comment. It's so true. Do you remember when you realized your dad was just a normal guy?
It took me a long time. It really did because they were divorced.
Right.
It took me probably until maybe I was in my 20s to realize like, oh, he's just a guy.
He's just a dude.
He's just a guy.
That's what's crazy. I remember when my dad passed, it was kind of a big thing of like, I was way older. I was in my mid-30s, but it still was like, once he was gone, I just lost that blanket of safety that was always there.
Yeah.
As a kid, you never are afraid because you're like, oh, my father's going to. Although he couldn't have protected us.
Right.
But in your mind, you're like, our dad's here. Yeah. We're all safe.
Right.
Not a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you get older and you're like, he's just a normal dude who met that woman and then we came out.
Right.
It's a weird. It is a beautiful time now that, like, even this morning, I went back in the house and they were, Daddy! And they come running across. When will that? I hope that never ends.
Ever. It's ever.
Going to, they're going to
I was at, you know, a comedian, John Caponera. You
of
know,
course.
John? I was at his house once for a, and I'm not a football guy, but the Bears were in the Super Bowl and he had a Chicago party. And I was at his house and his son was a teenager. And I don't know when the Bears were there. Was that 10 years ago now? Mm-hmm. But his teenager sat down next to him on the couch and threw his arm around his dad. And they were watching the game together. And I welled up because I was like, I hope my kid feels the same way about me when he's a teenager. We're like, he's not going to be ashamed to sit down next to me and put his arm around me.
Me too.
And
pretty cool.
But I will also understand if he doesn't want to do that. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, because you got to be your own. You got to be a man. I don't know. I get it all.
It is a, yeah.
But I hope.
I mean, you have a boy. I have two little girls.
Right.
So I'm kind of always daddy's, you know,
yeah.
Daddy's little princesses and stuff. So they right now they love me. But I'm sure there's going to come a day where they're like, you don't understand. Tommy's the best. He's a dick. You got to get rid of him.
Yeah.
That's coming. That's a, so you don't want them to ever find out that you're actually just a normal.
I guess so. Yeah.
Just, that's a really good answer, man.
Oh, wow.
What is one trait you hope that Oliver gets from you?
I think,
and one from your wife.
Well, she's the greatest. I mean, she is the most caring person I've ever met in my entire life, and so he'll get that from her. And you know, I think at the end of the day, I'm a pretty decent guy too. Like, I think even though I'm a sarcastic prick for
all
a living.
Love. And that's your mom's right. It's, you have a happy-go-lucky air.
Yeah.
I never really knew you as angry, Jimmy.
Yeah, you were lucky.
Those I knew you as... I mean, you were always really funny, but I, since we've kind of hung a bit, you're like, everything's good, man.
It
and
is.
And it's a beautiful tone to have. I try to get that way with everybody in life. I try to make my wife... Like, it's all good, man. One day something bad's going to happen. It hasn't happened yet. So why are we stressing the little shit every day?
In fact, that's the one thing I do say to Oliver. It's like when he gets worried about... Like, we just read... California Adventure, and he worked himself up. We ended up not going on the ride. It was just a simple Monsters, Inc. ride.
Yeah.
But he got himself all worked up about how it might be scary. And it's like he wasted a half hour of his life worried about this ride might be scary. Now, granted, we ended up getting out of line anyway because right. like, it was unfair to torture the kid.
Right.
But had he gone on it, he would have been like, oh, that wasn't so bad. So I was like, you're wasting that energy. Being a, you know, don't do that to yourself. Trust me, your dad's done that his entire life.
How do we? I'm in the same boat of trying to teach my kids that. How do we do that? I couldn't do it.
I could, right.
I don't know if it's capable of. Like, there was always the cool kid in class who just didn't. He was the Holden Caulfield of class. Where oh. like, that guy doesn't give a shit, and he's awesome.
Yeah.
How do you go through life not giving a shit?
I don't know.
I don't know. But
I don't
once
know.
We figure that out.
Yeah.
So you basically want him to be more like your wife, is what you're saying?
Yes, and to keep the happy-go-lucky thing. I don't ever want him to lose that. And he's sweet, and I don't want him to lose any of that.
I'm gonna tear up, man. See, sometimes we cry on this show. It's not all about laughs, Jimmy. I like the softer side of you.
Doing the best I can. Just trying to get through.
it is a stretch, right? All right, one last question. One word of wisdom, like a mantra, that you would leave with your son.
One word?
If you just had one little sign he was going to hang over his door... That was a quote from you.
You know what? He actually says it already. It's not even a quote from me. He said once, I love to smile. And because I said to him, I go, boy, you're such a smiley little guy. You're always smiling. He goes, Dad, I love to smile. And so I will actually not give him my quote, but I will give him credit for his great quote. Because it's like, if he says that the rest of his life, anybody that's around him is the luckiest person in the world. I mean, that's so a too. Great thing. It's a great outlook.
I think that's a great answer. I mean, I love to smile too. So, Jimmy Pardo, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You are awesome, man. And you're a great dad, and I know it. So people can come find you.
Well, jimmypardo.com, and then the podcast is nevernotfunny.com.
Never Not Funny. Wait, and if he's traveling, please go see him. The show is ridiculously funny.
Thank you.
Jimmy, you're a rock star. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you guys next time here on Father Time.